Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So, if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So, at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host, and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have, at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. As the story develops, we may need to change this approach, though, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you, and let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Wonderful. I feel like a new woman.
That was like the best possible version that press release could go.
Right?
Like, I don't totally unconflicted about being excited for that because, like, oh, well, no, Timothy Hutton. Oh,
Yeah.
that's great.
I don't like.
I love that Noah Wiley is just going to be in it as well. Like, why not?
It's like that's so weird to me. But I mean, I think it's really weird to me because they've all worked together so much, but in like a totally different genre.
Yeah.
So I know that they work well together and that they're good friends and everything, but
I wonder if he's
it's
gonna be like Nate Ford's little brother.
Oh God.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
No, he's like Sterling's protege.
oh shit.
Okay.
Or yeah.
Well, let's preface this because I'm already recording, so we can like.
Oh, okay.
So welcome back, everybody, for another episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. I've got Robin with me.
Hello.
It's always too long in between our podcasts together. And before we start talking about today's episode, which is the cross your heart job, cross my heart job, the cross my heart job, we're going to talk about some news that we literally found out about an hour ago.
And if you don't know the news that we're going to talk about, you should brace yourselves because you are listening to a Leverage podcast, which means you are probably a fan of Leverage.
Maybe. Or you're like, I don't know. I was going to say, or you're my mom, but my mom doesn't listen to my podcast because not even she loves me enough to listen to four seasons of me talk about a television show she's already heard me talk about. But yes, Dean Devlin posted at around 7 o'clock my time on Wednesday, April 22nd, that there will be a Leverage reboot. It's happening.
Yay!
Ordered by IMDb TV, which is how I know at least one of our co-hosts is watching the show now because you can watch Leverage on IMDb TV for free. So if you are just listening along and not able to watch these because it's not actually streaming anywhere else, that's where to go if
In
you don't have a
America,
TV
at least.
in
I think it's
America.
on
Yeah.
Netflix in Canada and the UK. In Europe, or it was.
Oh, brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's very good. But the thing that makes us even more able to be excited about this is that Timothy Hutton will not be returning, so we are not conflicted about how we feel about this. Instead, Noah Wiley will be starring.
But not as Nate Ford. They're not recasting Nate. He'll be a new undisclosed character.
This is not the third Mummy movie that we don't speak of. We're not recasting and pretending.
Which, side note, I legit have never watched that and will never watch it. I can't.
Oh, no. I can't. No, No. The minute they cast Maria Bello, who, whatever, I was like, I'm not even watching a trailer for that. I have no idea what it's called. Anyways, but more importantly, yes, IMDb TV has ordered this with the other four original cast members returning as their characters.
Although it sounded like Aldous Hodge would only be reoccurring.
That's really upsetting, but he's really making his way in the world, and so I can't be really upset.
And I guess I would prefer that than them like postponing it indefinitely or him not being in it at all because they can't work around his schedule.
Right.
So he would be reoccurring because he has other shows that he films for. So his schedule might not be free.
Yeah. And I know that like Beth Riescraff has a show right now as well. And Christian Kane's just kind of got picked up as well. But
yeah, but they might not be filming at the same time. They're going to apparently start filming this summer. And it specifies that they're going to follow all of the sanitation guidelines that are required. And they're going to be filming in like somewhere in Louisiana, I think.
Oh, good.
Which is weird. But
I could not read all of this. I was like hyperventilating. So I'm glad that you actually went in there. Because I was like, okay, I can read this or I can make dinner really quick and get ready to record right away.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Alec Hardison's still doing Sitting on a Hill. So that's season 2, which will be filming the same time as Leverage, which is a similar in that it's about corrupt people, but not similar in that it is not fun at all. It's not bad, but it's not a funny show.
I do feel like you can't do this for every episode, but the way that they often would structure the show, you could break Hardison out. Like if he's in Lucille for one or two of the episodes, you can film all his stuff separately in like a day or two. Or
oh yeah.
I don't know how much actually how long that takes, but you can have like Elliot and Parker going out and doing the thieving and the kicking and the punching, and then you cut back to Hardison.
Oh yeah. I don't think it would be a lot of fun because I know they all have fun playing off of each other, but totally doable. He could be in every episode.
Yeah.
And just like not interact in person with people most of the time.
Well, like, I don't know if you watched the Arrested Development reboot that they did on Netflix.
I watched several episodes, but I didn't get all the way through it.
There were a few where it was very obvious that those actors were not in the same room together, and it was not filmed at the same time, but they were trying to still have big group scenes, and it was like, oh, weird, why is Tobias just always standing in that one corner? So, yeah.
Tobias, come on.
No, I think that hopefully Leverage does a better job of integrating everything, but
yeah. This is so exciting.
It's really exciting. It does not say in the press release though anything about Mark Shepard, I don't think, unless I missed it.
I don't see anything. It says John Rogers and Chris Downey will come back as like consulting producers, but not as series runners.
Well, in theory, they're all working on a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
In the Name of the Wind. I don't think that show's ever going to actually happen.
What's that?
John Rogers was supposed to be working on the Name of the Wind show based on the Patrick Rothfuss fantasy novels.
Oh, I forgot that.
Yeah, it was like a whole thing. They were going to do that, and like Lin-Manuel Miranda was going to do the music, and it was this like really interesting. And then nothing ever has been announced about it. Like, are they doing it? Did they cast it? Are they waiting to see if there's ever a third book? Which, like, Rothfuss, man, I assume you listen to this podcast. You should maybe just give an update on that. Like, it's fine if it's not written, but like, give us an update on it.
Yeah. Oh.
But yeah. I'm all over the place. I'm going to try and focus in.
No, it's good. I was just still like reading more of the article.
It's a very exciting time. Maybe, yeah. So I'm not on every podcast, but I do feel like maybe you could, like, at the beginning of the podcast going forward, let everyone know if there's more news about this revival. It could be like a podcast within a podcast.
Yes. Ooh. You got to come up with a cute name for it, like the McElroy brothers would do.
Yeah.
It's like, let's go steal a podcast cast. I don't know. Let's go steal another podcast. I don't know.
Yeah.
Have you seen Is it out?
Oh, I'm sorry. Have I seen what?
But yeah, I'm super excited and definitely will be keeping people up to date. And as different co-hosts come on, we'll talk about their thoughts and feelings as well.
Cool.
Oh, we're fine.
Yay! Sorry, faxes.
No. Okay, well, speaking of antiquated technology, we have to deal with some of that in this episode.
Boy, do we in this episode. We'll get into it, but I remembered it as being one of my favorites, and then I was watching it, and then halfway through, I was like, oh yeah, the first half of this episode is one of my favorites.
Interesting. I want to know, like, at what point you're like, no.
I mean, it's a pretty good episode. There's just, like, one big asterisk right in the middle, and then otherwise I'm like, all right, we'll get into it.
I think I know what you're talking about, and I had some thoughts about that as well. And so let's get started so we can get to it. All right, so we are talking about the Cross My Heart Job, which aired August 21st, 2011. It was directed by PJ Pesce. I think that's how we said it in the commentary, P-E-S-C-E. This is his first episode that he directed. He directs one more, I think. But he's done a lot of things. He directed episodes of Supernatural, episodes of The 100. He's kind of been all over. And this one was written by Jeremy Bernstein, who came in and wrote it. And actually, he wrote it so tightly that they had to go in and write some extra scenes because it came out a little short. So there are some scenes that are just like they popped them in there so that they could fill the 42 minutes needed for television. And I think that's pretty amazing to like have the right amount of information and have the full con and then be like, oh, I guess we gotta write a silly scene here or there.
Yeah.
To make up the extra time. Because I know that I would be like, I have to cut down 45 minutes. Sorry, guys.
That's always what you hear about, where they have to like tighten it up a little or, yeah.
Yeah. So in this episode, which is a sort of like a riff on a bottle job episode.
It's a very big bottle, though.
It's a very big bottle. There's a lot of things in the bottle that you can move around. But the team is stuck at an airport after a job, and they have to retrieve a heart that's been donated and is on its way to being transplanted. That has been stolen from the transplant nurse, and they have to use what few things they have at their disposal to get the heart to the rightful recipient.
And it is a race against the clock.
It is 108 minutes they've got to get this heart to where it needs to go.
Not very much time, and none of their toys. What will they do? Well, a few toys. They have high heels and a lot of cash. So, some toys.
But as we all know, the cash disappears quickly.
Yes, but the heels are pivotal.
They're pivotal. Pivotal. and can be reused.
Yes.
And they are. So, the team is returning from a job, and they are on a layover in Cincinnati. And, or as we know it, the Portland Convention Center.
The Portland Convention Center is all airports. It is the Cincinnati airport. I don't think any airport in Ohio looks like this, right? I mean, this looks like
Cincinnati.
It's like JFK or Heathrow or, yeah, I think you might actually fly into Kentucky if you fly into Cincinnati, but it is, they've also used this as the Boston airport, I think.
At least twice.
But it kind of works because it's like, well, all liminal spaces are kind of all the same, like weird transitional spots. Like, okay, it's fine.
We get the vibes. Yeah. The atmosphere is very airport.
Yes.
And they're returning from a job and they're all kind of bickering because, you know, they've been on a long flight and they're family and they bicker. Sophie is complaining because she's sunburned because she had to play the heiress on the topless beach.
And which she says she always hates doing.
Yeah, well, like, she gets sunburned.
But this is just really frequently. It's like, oh, topless beach, better be French. Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Exactly. Hardison's you think you have it bad. I've got to replace all of our equipment that we've lost underwater, including the comms. And Elliot's like, are you kidding? I had to fight ex-Brazilian combat divers with spear guns underwater. And Parker's just sad or like upset that she didn't get to see the emerald, which was not a real emerald, and she can't understand this. They're talking about the Emerald of the Caribbean, which is the island of Montserrat, if you don't know. I did not know it.
I do love the running gag that Parker just does not understand, like, it's not even metaphor, but, like, they did this with the fiddle job, where they were like, we're gonna do it, and she's like, who's gonna be the fiddle? Am I the fiddle? Is Elliot the fiddle? Like, what?
And she does it again later in this episode, because she's so literal. Like, oh, we're going to set Nate on fire?
She's trying so hard to understand, and she just doesn't get it. Like, why would you call something an Emerald Isle if there's no emeralds there?
Right. There's got to be at least one. No, Parker. No.
Also, Hardison mentions at some point that he had to fake a volcano eruption. I'm sad that, like, we'll never see that.
Yeah, they...
Because I feel like it involves baking soda and Play-Doh and, like...
Like a model that he's filming from
kind of green screen.
I think in the commentary they were like, okay, we knew that we were going to reference a job that we weren't going to actually show, so we got to be as... It got to be all the things we couldn't actually put on the show, so, like, topless Sophie and a volcanic eruption and...
Well, and they bring this back, spoilers, I guess, they bring this back in the fifth season in the broken wing job, the one where Parker's got a broken leg and is stuck inside, and they keep, like, cutting to the job that she's not on, and it's just more and more elaborate things happening.
Oh my gosh.
So at least when they go back to that one, at least you see, like, a little bit of it.
Yeah. Yeah, but this one, they got to just be like, all right, it's completely bonkers. And you're sad you missed it. I'm like, somebody write it for me. And they said that. They're like, that's for the novels. Give me the novel. I need to read. There are some novels, and I need to read them.
I guess join our Patreon, and at very high secret levels, you get the puppet show that we put on about this.
Are they Muppet-style puppets? Are they shadow puppets? Are they cutout puppets? You don't know until you subscribe.
You don't know. But y'all, most of the co-hosts are librarians, which means we're all pretty crafty. That stereotype more or less exists for a reason. So they could be knitted puppets. They could be, like, all manner of fiber arts and, like...
And paper mache?
Yeah.
I got a Cricut.
What?
I have a 3D printer.
What?
I can make so many things happen.
I want to come hang out at your house, and I can't.
Well, they're not at my house.
Quarantined, and you're in another state.
Yeah, like, I'm, like, halfway across the country. So, while they are... in the middle of bickering and Nate's trying to, like, calm them down, his spidey senses start tingling, and he's like, you can see he, like, looks around like, okay, I know a crime has just occurred.
Something is off.
Yeah, something is rotten in the state of Denmark. And he, like, kind of zeroes in on several people, and finally we see him walk up to a woman in nursing scrubs who's at a payphone. payphone. Wow. And he's like, hey, I saw you were part of a pretty good dead drop back there. You want to tell me what's going on? And she's like,
And you get this little like flash cut back to how she switched. It was carrying a little cooler, like the kind of thing that you would take like tailgating, like a little tiny cooler. And it, she, you know, set it down, picked up an identical one. And then a guy with like a trick suitcase came by and picked up the one she dropped off and walked off. So you see the dead drop.
Yeah. It was pretty masterful, even though she's like biting her lip and very nervous. And he, you know, tells her, you know, I'm here to help you. Like, it looks like you did not want to do that. And like, tell me what happens. And this actress is so good. Like, I think it's also helpful that they didn't have to like rush through scenes because the episode's a little short. But her name is, it's Tina Holmes. And she's like, she just kind of like waits, and she's like obviously working through it, and she's like really upset. And she's like, you know, it was a human heart. They have my daughter. They called me and told me I have to give them the heart.
I think she doesn't have a lot of screen time in this episode, and she's not in the back half that much of it, but she really makes it feel like this is a real person. She's not just like the setup for the job, which happens sometimes where it's like a client comes in and presents the problem and then that's it. Like, she actually really does. But I was struck by Nate is often not good with people, and he is very good here with her, like very kind. And then as soon as it turns out that there's a kid on the line, like first her daughter and then the kid who's supposed to be getting this heart, there's a real shift in his demeanor. And like, he's still very kind, but you're also like, oh, this one is personal for him now.
Yeah. Yeah. And to like a scary degree.
Yeah.
So we find out that she's bringing the heart from Detroit, for a 15-year-old in Cincinnati, and his name's Joshua, and he's not going to make it. He won't be able to wait for the next heart. So he needs this heart. And they have a time crunch because a heart's only viable outside of a body for a certain amount of time. And it's already been 2 hours. So they have 108 minutes. And they have to do this by flying under the radar while they're in the airport without their tech. And they kind of go in a minute and talk about how much of their tech they don't have.
But it's one of those good setups that you get where it's like, how do we MacGyver stuff out of like, it happens in like Iron Man 3 and it happened in Alias all the time. And it's always just like delicious.
So like, I don't know what weird, I guess it's like the competence porn, but it's like, there's like, it just this primal itch that it scratches and you're like, yes, that's good. Maybe there's I could do this too.
Yeah, I think that's it. There's like a weird kind of preparing where I'm like, okay, like, have you seen The Equalizer with Denzel Washington? He's like a retired kind of hitman guy who gets back in the game. It's almost a similar setup to like John Wick, like very scary man who was trying not to be scary and has to go back to it. But there's a scene where at the end, it's like all the baddies chasing him into the basically Home Depot where he works and him just like making weapons out of everything and killing them all. But it's like, okay, good. So if I'm in this situation, that is how I can make a weapon. And like watching this, it's like, okay, so if I get stuck in an airport, like, here's how I will break in with sunglasses. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm prepared now.
This is how I steal the Platinum Flyers credit card. Yeah. I think that's definitely what it is like, oh, okay, now I know what to do. I honestly, I would never be able to do this and I will never be in this situation, knock on wood, but if, when, maybe I could. So to find out where, well, the first scene, actually, not the first scene, but this first scene, they've got to get the daughter first before they can focus on the heart. And all again, Parker has said some like weird things. She's like, well, why don't we just get another heart? And Elliot's like, where? From whom are we going to get this heart? And she's like, oh, that's okay. And you know, she's like, well, if they have the heart, they'll give the daughter back, right? And they're like, no, that's not how it's gonna work. And they're also, she's also like, well, they could have just gotten in a cab and left with this heart. Like, they might not be on a plane right now because they're kind of focusing on the planes and where they could be. And they're like, we know they have to be leaving on a plane because otherwise they won't have any chance. Like, this way, if they think this way, they've got at least a chance. I'm like, oh, that's so true and so fatalistic. And the way that Elliot says it is very grim.
I did wonder, like, what, I don't understand why this was set in Cincinnati, because I was trying to figure out, leaving from Detroit, she flies to Cincinnati on a connection to somewhere?
Like, no, she wasn't on a connecting, like, she was going to Cincinnati. They're on a connecting flight.
Oh, okay. I think I missed that part. I thought she was having to connect as well. Okay.
No, that's my
confusion. I thought she was connecting through Cincinnati to somewhere, and I was like, why would you do that?
No. Okay. Then our timetable would be much shorter.
Yes, okay.
We got 20 minutes because she's got to get on a plane. Okay. What was she going to do, though, if she showed up at that hospital and there was no heart?
I guess, like, you open the container and you're like, what?
She's like, I got hungry on the plane. My iron's been a little low.
Or maybe, like, you just confess at that point, but your daughter is safe, so you don't care.
Can they prove that? I guess they, I don't know. She's got the phone with the text messages or whatever.
Well, so you could ask the daughter, like, did you get kidnapped?
I guess that's also a possibility.
But no, that's a good question. Like, yeah, where was she gonna?
Because immediately she's getting fired, right? And she might have a case drawn up against her by the lawyers. So, whoo, terrifying possibilities. So, they have sent her a photo of her daughter, and Hardison's like, I can't do anything with this but make a phone call. And then he's like, oh, wait, I could use context clues and look at the other things in the picture, because she's sitting in front of a fish tank, and it's obviously a restaurant, and they zoom in on like the cocktail menu that's just right there in plain view. And you know, Hardison's like, there's so many restaurants in Cincinnati.
And then Nate very intensely is like, I know where she is.
Yeah, she's just down the hall. Just down the corridor at Crab-a-Rama.
Oh my god! So it's a crab. I get that it's funny, but it is a crab restaurant in Ohio in an airport. I live in Virginia, really close to Maryland. We go to Maryland, we eat crab at restaurants that serve crab, and it's still kind of gross, right? Like, they were caught that morning and brought directly to the table, and it's still kind of like, ugh. Like, what, in an airport? Yeah. In Ohio?
Yeah. Well, they were talking about that.
Before you get on a plane?
Oh, God, can you imagine? No, they were like, we should do something that's like a food that people do eat in Ohio.
It should be chili.
That's what they said. They said chili, and they're like, but you can't make a chili-themed restaurant. Like, what does that look like?
I'm pretty sure they exist in Ohio. I drove through Ohio with my dad, and I was looking at the road food options, and it was a lot of chilies and a lot of pierogies. And one place that had grilled pierogies inside a grilled cheese sandwich. And I feel like if that had been served and you just got a scene of Gina Bellman looking at this sandwich, it would have been amazing.
One, yes, that would have been Emmy nomination gold. Two, I have pierogies in my freezer.
You could make a grilled cheese.
I need to go get bread and cheese. that might be a project this weekend. I'll send you a photo. Maybe I'll make my own bread. But then I still don't have like a little bit of goat cheese.
Oh my God. No, I think you need like American craft singles for this. It was not.
I want like a nice like sharp cheddar, I think would be good. That sharp cheddar with the potato.
You could do a deconstructed one and put cheese and breadcrumbs on top of the pierogies.
No, baby, I'm going all in.
All right. Well, I think it was Road Food was how I found this site. It was somewhere around Columbus.
Okay. So, food aside. Their
Crab-O-Rama, because that is the thing that now exists in the Leverage universe, are crab restaurants that Nate know about. Nate knows this well enough to recognize.
No, Nate walked by it earlier and was like, that's gross, and kept walking.
I don't think so. I think Nate eats gross stuff. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
I mean, when you're drunk, anything tastes good, right?
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah,
he's had some low spots in his life. So then Elliot, Parker, and Sophie go to scout this place. And, you know, Elliot walks in. He's like, all right, they're like the only people in there. We need a distraction. So, of course, Sophie takes her pants off.
Naturally. But very cutely when she does it, Elliot and Parker, like, sort of immediately, like, form a little shield.
They do. It's really cute. And her, like, silk blouse is not wrinkled at all when she takes her slacks off. I did love that she was wearing, like, little ballet flats. Because she's at the airport. Like, you know, you want to take something off easily. You want to be comfortable. But she's always ready for business. And she pulls some red heels out of her bag.
So.
And.
That scene reminded me so much of, like, in, like, women's magazines, like, Cosmo or Allure or whatever, they always have these things about like what you can pack for your fun vacate, like how to pack for a vacation for 3 days or 5 days, of like pack these four items and here's how you can combine them into different outfits for all your things. Yeah. It's like, oh look, that's what she did. She's it's like she wardrobe. Has like a, it's such a capsule wardrobe, it's such goals. And as someone who keeps trying to have a capsule wardrobe and just failing at the important part of getting rid of most of my clothing, I was like, yes, this, like, oh, you have a dress that's also a top somehow magically, and like, oh, all your pieces fit together. And I kind of wish it had extended throughout the episode. Like, I wanted her to also to just keep.
Like, yeah. That would have been great. Also, like, maybe that was the outfit that she brought because she was the topless heiress on the beach. Like, she didn't really need much.
No, like, maybe she's wearing bikini bottoms under there, and that was it.
Yeah. She's, like, one other, like, bathing suit cover-up in the bag, and, like, her toothbrush, and that's all she had.
Or maybe those sleeves are tearaways. Just, like, and she just rips out her sleeves.
So, she takes her pants off. And puts her heels on. And Elliot's like, you keep heels in your bag? And she's like, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, this episode was written by men. I don't know if they think that's really weird. But I think, like, if you're in an airport, you're a woman, you have a large bag. Like, you keep, an extra pair of shoes is not a weird thing to have on your person. Because later he's like, did you pack handcuffs in there? And I'm like, handcuffs and heels are not on the same level, dude.
Yeah, this is not.
But she's like, not on this job.
So I may have told you a story, but I had a friend who did IT work in DC, and he made some joke about like women and all their shoes, and I was like, come on man, like you're better than that joke, right? Like, and he's like, no, like all the women that I work with, like they all have so many shoes they can't even keep them all at home. They all have a giant pile under their desk. I was like, yeah, because they don't commute in them. They wear sneakers and then they put their work shoes on at work. And it blew his mind. It was like this huge source of mystery for him. Like, yeah, that's why all the women you see on the metro have like white tennis shoes, or like big Nike sneakers, and then they change. And he had no idea. And so I feel like there's something so deeply we like tell boys like shoes are mysterious and women love shoes and you'll never understand it, and they're just like, all right, I guess I'll never understand it, so why should I even try? Like, you just assume, and it's like, no, this is fine. Like, high heels are not comfortable, so you wear flats until you need your heels and then you put them on.
Yeah,
that's fine. Like, most women who go to, you know, like, oh, I have to drive to a wedding that's going to last for a really long time, better throw a pair of flats in my car so that I can swap them out, like, halfway through the reception. This is not...
Yeah. You know. It's not an unreasonable thing.
It's not. I think there's something where it's like, oh, who could ever understand the mysteries of women and their heels? Oh.
And she's like, nope, it's logical. Also, I'm a con woman. Like, I'm a grifter. I might need them
with great legs. So,
yeah. It's a capsule wardrobe, Elliot. Come on. So she goes in her heels, and she's super charming. And I love her, like, hi, when she gets off the phone. She's like, hi. Please stop. And the waiter's like, oh, we're about to close, because she asks if they can use the space, her and her coworkers, because they've been laid over.
Which, she does a really brilliant thing where she starts talking on the phone before she goes into the restaurant. She does not, like, walk in and then start. So she comes in, like, conversation already in progress about how she's been delayed and can't, is there any way? And then she's like, oh, can we just set up shop in here? And he's just, like, staring at her high heels, just like, the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. This is Cincinnati, lady.
What is that bit on 30 Rock when it's like Tina Fey's character, or Liz, she realizes she like goes to the Midwest somewhere, and everyone's like, oh my god, you're so pretty, are you a model? And she's like, what? And she's like, I just realized that a 6 in New York is like a 10 in Ohio.
Yep.
Like, a horrible thing to say about the Midwest. They're very, very beautiful people there, I'm sure. But yeah, so she goes in, she's distracting the waiter, and she's giving him a huge wad of cash, saying, could you just stay open for us? I'll make it worth your while.
Can I get you a menu?
Yes, and Elliot and Parker walk in, and Elliot, like, immediately takes out the kidnapper.
Well, also, Parker just, like, grabs the girl.
Yeah.
They like walk it. So the kidnapper's sitting in a booth with the girl. The waiter is distracted by Sophie. And Parker just like basically like sack of potatoes the like 10-year-old girl, just then like kind of yeets her away. And then Elliot comes in from the side and takes out the guard. And the waiter is just like, look at all this money.
I am a waiter. I make $2 an hour. I've never seen this much money in my life.
It's a very slapsticky gag. And I was really here for it.
Yeah, it's really great. And then immediately we get to make Crab-O-Rama our base. They like close off the doors, and Parker's already talking about giving Tanya, the little girl, a taser. She's like, oh yeah, we're going to get you a taser. You just keep that with you all the time. So this would never happen to you again.
Things I would like to see in the revival of the show, by the way, all of these young girls that they have bonded with, right, which were up to like 3 or 4 of them now, if you count the carnival job, but then there was the boost job, and I would really like it if they have like met up and formed some sort of like sorority,
yes,
or something, like they all went to college together and are just doing some real low level like grifting for righteousness.
Oh hell yeah.
Yeah, so I would like for that to be a thing. So John Rogers, I don't know if you also listen to this blog or to this podcast, but you can have that one for free.
Yeah, Dean Devlin, just let us know. So we've taken out the kidnapper, and we find out that he's just a local thug for hire, and there is nothing on him to link us to the actual heart thief, and now we only have 93 minutes to go to figure all of this out. So it's another stumbling block. And now we get like a rundown of them being short on resources, and they do the classic leverage shot of like going around the circle of the table that they're sitting at. But that earlier in the scene, there were no round tables in this restaurant. They had to go take one from the bar.
and like put some stuff on it to fake it for this Crab-O-Rama. But nobody, and the director, I think, or the writer, one of them like hadn't filmed this before, and so they were like, it's gonna look dumb, like people are gonna notice that it's not really supposed to be there, but no one does. Like, it looks, it's so quintessential to the look of Leverage that you're like, who's paying attention to the tables in this restaurant? Not me. Until they told me about it, and then I noticed. But we find out they have no computers or any tech because it was damaged. They have no cash because they gave it to the waiter. They have no credit cards or IDs because Hardison burned them all to cover their tracks. Parker's lockpicks are checked in her baggage, and the airport's Wi-Fi is crappy. So we got to go steal some stuff. We gotta go shopping, basically.
Time for a montage.
I'd love a sneaky criminal montage. And as Parker and Harrison go off to source stuff, Sophie kind of expresses some concern that Nate is getting a little personal. This is gonna get a little personal for him because it's about a kid. And he just kind of brushes it off. He's like, does it matter? We get it done, we get this back, like.
This is where you get the flashback to Sam, right?
You get, like, one of the first ones around this point, and then there's another
one. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because, you know, it's a kid in the hospital that might die.
Well, that's, they just kind of stopped. I think they overused them a little bit in the first season. You got a lot of them, and then they really backed off.
They did, you're right.
And it's kind of nice because, like, I don't want to say they lost their impact, but like it became kind of an expected part of like, oh, this is how it's going to affect Nate. So I really, like, I wasn't expecting it. And then when that happened and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Oof.
Yeah, it does. You get some more of the impact back. Definitely. And because we've also seen Nate kind of even out in his abuse of alcohol in this season a little, you know, he's not actively pretending to stay sober, but he's also not out of his mind drunk. So it's kind of like walking this line of, is this gonna, would this tip him over the edge? Like, no. There's a lot of talk about like what's driving Nate and can he ever get over this? Which like started in the very first episode of the season. And then the montage of Elliot stealing this credit card from this obnoxious platinum flyer.
Oh my God. This guy who's just like, I'm a platinum flyer and I demand, which that felt like the most realistic part of this episode, that guy.
We've all seen that guy at the airport.
So yeah, I mean, I went to college overseas. So for my undergrad, I did 24 transatlantic flights in 4 years. Mostly from Arizona to the UK, which is like, that's a lot of flights. Like, that was usually three. One time it was six flights to get me home. Yeah.
Oh my God. No,
I spent a lot of time in airports.
And so much money.
Yeah, although we put my tuition on a credit card, so then that was like airline points. Okay, so like, okay. It wasn't. Yeah. You know, it's all right. But I have a lot of stories of like being in airports, and there are definitely the people who actually had like were flying first class and everything. They weren't ever a problem because they're away in their like secret expensive lounges.
Right.
But there was always someone somewhere in the airport throwing a fit about how they should like get something better. For whatever reason.
Yeah.
Man, that platinum flyer, dude. So Elliot does a really slick move where the guy's kind of waving his wallet or like waving his credit card at them. And then he goes to put it back in the briefcase. And Elliot just like holds out a folded up magazine and just catches it as he walks by and walks off with it. And it's so slick.
Which is like, legit.
Really casual.
Yeah. It's a legit lift that Apollo Robbins taught them. Like, that's actually how people will steal your wallet.
Which,
one of the ways.
I mean, I guess, like, if you do that, like, more power to you. That's why I just shove everything into my bra.
Try to get a ladies.
But it's a really nicely done like shot of just like floop floop.
Yeah, it's so seamless. It's just like, oh, that guy's an asshole and deserves to be taught a lesson. He's waving a card around. Floop, goodbye. I'm gonna go buy some walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
And
that's what they sell in the airport.
Right? Like fine leather goods and walkie-talkies. And then Parker she tries the locks on some little kiosk and it doesn't open and you're like, okay, what is she going for? And then she is trying on sunglasses at another one. And she tries on a couple and drops them and like picks them up and like slides one into her pocket and then walks away, comes back, steals a snow globe, and walks back by. What did she steal the last time?
Isn't it like a t-shirt?
She's like holding a t-shirt and then she drops the t-shirt. Maybe she did go back. There's something that she stole. But yeah. Which is hilarious because you like see her leave and she comes back, grabs something else, comes back the other direction again. And you're just like, it's good. It's good. That rule of threes. And then she like breaks the sunglasses and uses the end of the sunglasses to pick the lock. And she opens it up and there's like a big old desktop computer inside.
Which, by the way, did you catch the name of that cart? It's called the Linguistic Mystic.
Ooh.
Which I don't really know what it was selling with that, but I really like that as a
translation software.
I don't know, but if you ever form a girl group to start doing like leverage themed songs, I think it should be called the Linguistic Mystics.
I like it.
Just as a very deep cut.
Definitely. Our leverage parody songs.
Yes. Which I will neither write nor sing as a favor to the universe.
Okay, fine. Guess I'm in this on my own. But yeah, so then she like, I wish there was a scene, like I know that they had to put some extra scenes in, and I wish one of them was her presenting Hardison with this computer.
Or just carrying it back.
Yeah, how did she get that out without anybody noticing? But yeah, so Hardison has it, and then we have a freaking dial-up tone, which is so great. In 2011, he's just like,
and it's like a DOS-based computer. Yes, it is. Although it's hard now because this is old enough. You know, it's almost 10 years old, and I was trying to remember, like, okay, what was the technology in 2011? Like, what cell phone did I have, realistically? Like, what? And then, like, when would this computer have been cutting edge? And I was finding it hard to put these.
Oh, no, like, 2011. You know, 2011, we had iPads.
Like, right, but, like, when would this computer have been? Was it, like, late 90s? Or?
Yeah, that's hard, you know, because things accelerated so quickly at some point, right?
Yeah. I guess I was trying to think of like, well, I feel like I maybe would have used that in high school and not.
Definitely not. In college, we already had desktops with like flat screens. Like they weren't
okay.
Those big.
I feel like iMacs were a thing in college. That was like the big thing for desktops for people. It was like the all-in-one. Sorry, yeah. I'm taking us down a weird path that we don't have to go down, but
I know.
Hard watching this or watching shows like Leverage or like Veronica Mars or something where they weren't supposed to have future tech, but it was just supposed to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, well, wait, was that really good or is it supposed to be bad or how does this all fit?
This is already supposed to be bad because we've had several instances like this season where Hardison already has like a big touch screen.
True. Like, okay.
That surface that they're doing things on.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this, because we've got the dial up.
So it's probably like 15 years out of date.
Maybe. Yeah.
Is that what we're thinking? Okay.
Yeah. And it's so slow. And so they, but before they can kind of do anything, they've got to get this, they have to go steal a national transplant list. And Hardison's like, yeah, but I need an IP address. I need an email address. I need something so I can get in to begin with. So Sophie does her magic on the phone with her like Midwestern accent. And she's like, oh, hi, we're from the Ohio transplant clinic. And we need this thing because it got spilled on in the plane.
So they email. She does the cutest little like, oh, you know how it is with those little trays, one little pop and whoop, OJ everywhere. I love it. I love the way she's like, OJ everywhere. She sounds like the mom on Bobby's World. It's so good.
Oh my God, Bobby's World. Yes. That's one of those kind of transitions where they don't even have to say, oh, hey, Sophie, you should call and trick them into doing this. They're just like, we need an email. Sophie's like, give me the phone. What am I asking for? Got it. You know, it's super easy.
Their client is sitting there just like helping out, like pitching in where she needs to, but otherwise just like kind of okay. Just like, oh yeah, these people will take care of everything. They got my daughter back. This lady's doing a cool accent. They've got this. Fine.
Fine. Look, it's all right. There's a really old computer. It's fine. And I love the line when Nate is like trying to hurry up Hardison on the computer. And he's like, hey, this is like, we're not asking Elliot to fight a guy with a nerf sword. And Elliot's like, Damascus, 20 blah, blah, blah.
2002.
He's like, you've never been to Damascus. Just, and I'm like, oh, Elliot fighting someone with a nerf sword.
I would like to see that. I want to see Elliot fighting someone with a super soaker.
Yes. That'd be cool. I was like, okay, well, now I want to like compile a list of like dumb things I want to see Elliot fight with, like a paperclip.
Oh, that was one thing. Apparently they thought about it. Someone pitched, I don't know if it was for this episode or just having Elliot fight a guy with a roll of duct tape, which would be amazing.
Yes.
Right? Like, he could hit them with it and then eventually start taping them. So when they rushed at him,
he could like have it clenched and he could use that to punch. Yeah.
But then like every time they swung, he could like tape them more. And then in the end, it's just like a guy taped.
And he just like tears it with his teeth, like to rip it off the roll. Or it's done and he just throws the roll. Yes.
No, I think he would just like tear off the very end of it and then he'd walk away with it because like you never know when you're gonna need duct tape.
He just wears like a bracelet.
Yeah.
Later you see him like throw it to distract somebody. I like it.
Yeah.
That would be really cool.
So I'll add that to the list of things Elliot should fight with.
Yeah. So they get into the database of everybody who's up for a heart transplant. So now they have to build a profile. And this is another instance where they like bring the victim in. Linda's here to like say, okay, these are the things you have to look for. It has to be somebody who's about the same weight, the size and weight, because you can't put a big heart in a small body or vice versa. They have to be within this, you know, distance range. So
and they have to be like a genetic match.
And they have to be a genetic match. And so Nate's looking over Hardison's shoulder and he's like, there, that guy, Dean Chesney.
And Dean, he's like, Chesney. Now, who? Dean? What name does Dean Chesney kind of sound like? Dick Cheney.
Oh, it does. I was like, Kenny Chesney?
That would be a weird flex. Kenny Chesney. I would have some questions about like, I felt like, I mean, maybe
Dean Devlin just really loved Kenny Chesney. I mean, and he was like, I just want to name a character after the two of like, us.
Dean Chesney is a great bad guy name, right? Like, it's got good syllables and
yeah,
but it does feel like maybe intentionally close to
a bit of an homage.
Possibly.
Especially once you see how they cast this character.
And the fact that they film him like Darth Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi, right? Where he's like fat and squished and like. I mean, I don't know that I'm in any position to judge based on how I look on this Zoom call, but like, yeah. But yeah, so this guy kind of sounds, his name sounds similar to a former vice president's, and the baddie is eventually revealed to look like Anakin Skywalker at the end of Return of the Jedi, complete with like weird tubes and facial lesions. So that's,
yeah. And yeah, and Nate's like, kind of names off all the bad things about this guy. And he's like, I've had my eye on him for a while. And they're like, okay, so why didn't you focus on him? He's like, because he was dying. Like, there's no point. He was already getting the ultimate revenge. So now they've like figured out this guy's in Chicago. So they're definitely flying a plane to him. And they've got to ground his private jet. So they have to get into the tower to ground his jet. But the thing is, you can't hack the tower. You've got to actually physically be in there to do it. So they have to get the access in there, and there's three levels of access, which we've, you know, in the potato, the hot potato job, they talked about like three levels. So we kind of know the score. We got to get different badges to get into different areas.
In case you needed a little refresher, Hardison is showing them this on a map of the airport that he has drawn on the specials board for the Crab-O-Rama. So there's little cartoon crabs all around the blackboard that he is using to demonstrate this.
And his drafting skills are amazing.
They're so good. But I just love that he like erased the specials and used that.
We gotta rewrite them in the morning, so that's fine.
I was really hoping it would extend to like whiteboard markers on the crab tanks around, like number style, but written on the fish tanks.
Oh my gosh! And then they like shoot through.
Yes.
The way that they have the glass, because they have those clear things that they shoot through a lot in the apartment. Oh my god, that would have been amazing. Let's go back and redo this episode.
Puppet show.
So to get our first level of access to the tower, Sophie uses her heels again and twists her ankle. And in the commentary, they were also impressed because Gina Belt, they were going to get a stunt woman in to do this. And Gina's like, no, I can twist my ankle. It's fine. And they were like, and she did.
I mean, I guess the worry is that she would like actually hurt it.
But... yeah. But again, they're just like, she twisted her own ankle. Give her an award.
I thought she did a very nice job of playing the kind of embarrassed that you would be if you did that.
Yeah. But a little louder.
Yeah.
When she's like, oh. I'd be like crawling away in shame.
I did slip on something on a metro station. It was like someone had like a brooch that had fallen off and I stepped on it and it was metal and I just on tile and I just like ate it. Right. Mm-hmm. And immediately there were like 9 metro employees around me. I have never seen this happen. Like you barely see one employee most of the time.
Yeah.
Like materialized out of the ether to be like, ma'am, are you okay? Are you injured at all? Do you want to file an incident report? Like, do you need us to call? And I was like, what is happening? I'm like, oh, you don't want to get sued. Oh yeah. No, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And they were like, good. Is it a loose tile? What happened here? I'm like, no. Someone lost their brooch. Here it is. I'm going to go now. I am fine. Just embarrassed. But.
Well, I hate that feeling when you trip and it's not your fault, but you feel horrible and you're like, I don't want to cry. Even though there's no reason to cry. You're fine. Just get up. Don't look at me.
Yeah. And it's like, well, and then you're like, who saw me? Did anyone see me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Sophie wants people to see her, and she gets helped into a wheelchair by an employee and lifts his badge, and Elliot rolls his eyes as he walks by and grabs the badge from her. And then he and Parker immediately go in to get the second level of badges, which are in an employee like changing room, and she picks a lock and he punches a lock. And they, you know, get these new badges. And then they both change their clothes I think they both mention it, but John Rogers, he's like, this is the scene that launched 1,000 fics. And because Parker takes her shirt off.
Because they just...
They're just changing their shirts. Like, it's, come on, guys.
I did think it was a nice touch that, like, because you have that scene in the pilot where she goes to change her shirt in the elevator and both Hardison and Elliot are really awkward about it. And then, like, I think they do it in the finale also. Like, that very same scene almost in the elevator and they're all fine with it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was nice that they don't have any... And I feel like Hardison and Parker wouldn't have had any issue here either if the two, even though they're, like... at this point sort of canonically together, they're just working.
Yeah, it's they're not... in the middle of a job. Like, they're not gonna be like, oh, look at that.
Yeah, there's no point. Like, why would Elliot be weird about it or check her out at all?
Yeah. And I love, like, just the way that it's directed where he, like, he takes a shirt and he takes his outer shirt off and he, like, throws it at the camera. Yeah. Almost in a way to be like, hey, we're working a job, stop being a creep camera person.
You also, when he like, takes his, because he's wearing a button down over a tank top, and when he takes his button down off, you see that he has, like, a wound on his arm.
Of course it does.
It was, like, a bandage around it, but there's, like, a little blood through the bandage, and so it's probably from, well, Spear. It might be from Christian Kane actually getting hurt, because that seems to happen a lot, but it also could be like a spear gun thing, but they don't ever really refer to it at all. It's just like, yeah, this is Elliot. He's probably wounded in some way because this is how he does. He's always just got some sort of contusion.
I know they didn't even, I don't think it was a Christian thing, which like you said, totally 95% of the time when there's something that's not, we don't see it happen to Elliot. It's because Christian got hit in the head with a football or something. But yeah, they didn't mention it in the commentary. But I do also like that just little, like, this is, they were doing the job in the, you know.
It also seemed possible that that's to cover up a tattoo, but I don't know if Christian Kane has a bunch of tattoos or not. I know Timothy Hutton does, and that's why there's some scene where he's, like, in a towel, but also wearing a button-down shirt. And they were just like, yeah, we don't want to cover up your tattoos. Just put a shirt on.
Also, maybe we don't want to see your chest.
Yeah.
that's a big part of it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't, Christian Kane never does shirtless scenes, so.
Not even just like in a tank top?
Tank tops, yeah, but.
Yeah.
Not very often. Maybe he did on Angel.
This show is not big on like men with no tops on. Has Hardison had any topless scenes?
No, but Hardison wears a tank top.
Yeah,
a lot.
Very well.
But I'm trying to think about like in Angel and the Librarians if Christian Kane ever.
Yeah, he definitely takes off a shirt at the end of last season when the Italian gets shot. But he's got his tank top on underneath.
Yeah.
Like, rips it off.
I feel like he might have a shirtless scene in Angel when he comes back as Lindsay and he's covered in tattoos for, like, the show. I think he might be shirtless.
If there are any Caniacs out there, let us know.
Yeah. Or Christian Kane, if you're listening to this.
What? I'm like, that might be a little personal. He might not remember.
No, just let us know. Let us know if that was a tattoo thing or like a random wound.
Yeah. Okay. So they have this second badge, so he can kind of, they can move forward and try to get the third badge. And they he gets it off a woman who's about to leave to like go off ships. Because they only keep like a skeleton crew at night, and so a bunch of people are leaving right now, so this is a good opportunity to get those badges. And just as he's about to like approach this very attractive woman and like get her badge from her, another pilot just like walks up and is like, hi buddy, I've been having bad tailwinds, blah blah blah, like
blah blah,
like,
pirate chat, blah blah.
Yeah, and he's like, dude, And he's like, I need to go hit on this lady, basically. And he's like, oh, okay, go for it.
Smooth tailwinds, captain, and salutes him.
What's wrong with you?
Gross.
But he gets this lady's badge. And that lady was, like, very, very beautiful. And then we have a flashback to Hardison telling them that the walkie-talkies might be interfered with by the tower's signals. And we see that that is the case because Elliot can't get a hold of him. And so he has to page him as Captain Picard. Or somebody Picard.
Kirk Picard.
Kirk Picard, your party is waiting for you at door E or gate E.
Which I wonder how many other like nerds in that airport were like, oh no, someone's trying to get a hold of me.
That's my nickname. They figured out my screen name. But luckily, Hardison gets to that door first, and Elliot gives him the badge, and he's like, this is for a woman. And Elliot's just like, man up. Doesn't matter. Do your job. And then there's a pretty like powerful scene with Nate and Sophie, and he's like on this website, like reading about Joshua, the boy who needs the heart. And Sophie walks up and he's like, I know what you're going to say. She's like, I think you should have a drink. And he's like, oh wait, maybe I did not know what you were going to say. And, you know, they have this conversation. She's like, we don't like it when you drink, but we do trust you when you drink and all this stuff. And he mentions that Sam would have been 13 this year. He's like, he would have been a teenager. Probably would have been a pain in the ass, but you know, he's like, it is personal. And then he does take a drink. But Sophie mostly just doesn't want him to get out of control. And that doesn't really work.
Yeah.
But Hardison makes it into the tower. And I didn't write up this scene, but so this scene.
This is the scene I was like,
he goes to like scan himself in, but he discovers he needs a PIN number. So he has to go back to the guard station that's right there to get his PIN reset. And the guard scans his badge and sees that the picture and the name are for a woman. And then he looks up and Hardison is very obviously a man. So Hardison has to like play off and like pretend that he's trans and like get kind of offended. Very offended in a very Hardison doing a con way that this guy is not taking him seriously as the person that he really is and is now identifying as. And when I was watching it, I was like, okay, it's 2011. Not the best way to handle this, but could definitely be way worse. And in the commentary, they were saying that they were like a little nervous with how they were handling it. And all of the feedback they got back afterward was really positive from people.
So the joke of it, I mean, the butt of the joke is definitely the security guards who are, you know, who... And the joke is not like, haha, it's a man pretending to be trans. Isn't that funny? The parts that I had a problem with were that, A, he kind of immediately lapses into like a stereotype of how a gay man would talk.
Yeah, which he's done before and always makes me uncomfortable.
Cute. And if he had just kept playing it as like, I don't want to say straight. That's not what I
mean.
But like just played it as Hardison, like in the normal way he talks, that I would have been much more comfortable with it.
Right. It would have seemed more natural. But
it was too much. And I get, yes, 2011, like almost 10 years ago. And this is one where like, I feel like even more than technology, like how quickly it's changed in terms of like how people discuss trans rights, which trans rights, and certainly there's a long way to go still, but I don't think you would get this scene now. Or be played really differently. But the other thing that bothered me about this scene, and it makes a little more sense when I found out that they added it later for time. But it's incredibly, it felt like such lazy writing of, he goes up and says, hey, my pin, like he can't get through the door. He walks like 10 feet to the security desk, says, I can't get through, something's wrong with my pin. Can you reset it? And the guy scans it and it pops up on screen and his pin, it's like pin 5317, like 72 point font, which like, that's not how pin numbers work.
Yeah.
They're private. He wouldn't be able to get his old pin. Like that's not,
like they would know
him a keypad and said, enter your old pin.
Yeah. Here, oh, that's so true.
And it could have been like, okay, verify your, I need you to verify your date of birth or some other information that like maybe Hardison doesn't have. That, and I say this as someone who like has a pin number attached to a badge and like what you have to go through to reset it.
Yeah.
I had to do in 2011. Like that part was definitely true for this. Yeah. And the whole point is it's so secure. And that part felt so lazy. Mm-hmm. And it made me less willing to forgive anything that was awkward about the other part. Because I was like, I don't think you put much care into crafting this scene. I think you went for kind of an easy joke of like, haha, wouldn't it be funny if... And there are other ways to get around, like... It could have been Hardison being like, oh, it's my girlfriend's badge. Oh no, we must have gotten them switched. Like, isn't this... You know how it is when like, well, like, there are other ways... could have handled it or other, because also once he gets in to the like to the air traffic control tower, everyone just accepts like, oh hey dude, we've never seen before, which happens a lot, but they often play it off as like, oh, they have to immediately be a part of the group or something, and that doesn't happen. So there was another option for how you could have added a scene of like,
Introducing.
Maybe he has to like call and fake a call from someone saying, I'm calling in sick, but I called in a buddy who's coming over from the Louisville airport who will be there shortly or whatever.
Yeah. Like, or Nate calls as a higher up person and says, hey, we've got a new guy that, you know, is coming out today. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there were a lot of ways that could have been, they could have addressed more plot holes with this time instead of a scene that really just is. Did not feel up to the ordinary par of what you get from a Leverage episode, where even if it's not true, like even if it's, you know, like a ledger thing as opposed to a black box, it's still kind of, I don't know, you can imagine a world where that is true, where I can't imagine any sort of actual world where this is the security system that's in place.
Yeah.
So it makes me less willing to forgive the transphobic, sort of the homophobic parts of it.
Yeah. I completely agree. Like, I love that breakdown of it because I'm just like, all right, well, Hardison is notorious for overacting when he's playing a con. So I kind of get that. But it did, like, the whole time made me comfortable, like, when he's like, I was Francesca, now I'm Frank. Like,
yeah.
No, I think if you are trans, like, you don't make, like, with someone you don't know, you're not going to make a joke like that.
No, you're not going to be like, let me tell you all about my dead name. Or, I mean, maybe you will, right? Like, I'm not trans. I'm not going to speak for all trans people who'd say, like, well, this is how everyone handles it. But, like,
No,
and certainly, I mean, like, I have worked with trans people who have their old gender or a dead name. Not old gender, but like, you know, their ID does not match up.
Right.
And there is some expectation that like, oh, this is a thing that is going to have to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. And I mean, also, as I think about it more, wouldn't those, there's not a lot of people who go into the tower. There's not a lot of people who have those badges.
Yeah. Wouldn't they recognize? Wouldn't
we have just seen that woman come out of the tower because she was just getting off shift? Unless they had just gotten on shift. But also, like, you'd think they would have recognized her in some way.
Right. They may be like, oh, that incredibly, like, tall, beautiful, statuesque woman.
This is not some, like, boring
with those cheekbones.
Yeah, I was like, because we were talking earlier about, like Sophie's the most beautiful woman in Ohio right now. Like,
except not, because that lady works there.
Yeah. There's no way they don't know that woman. So, yeah. I know that they filmed that. They had to film that even, like, later, like way later in the season, because they couldn't get back into like an airport setting, and so that's filmed in the prison that they use later.
I still feel like you could do something.
Yeah
right. I mean, like, it's the one bit I liked about it was how at one point Hardison's like, are you hitting on me? And the security guard plays it not like he's offended that Hardison thinks that he's hitting on him, but he's just like, you could see him visually be like, I just need to be done with this conversation.
Yeah.
Like, I need to just, like, not continue this. Here's your, like, I just solved your pin issue. Please go away now. And I did, I felt like that was probably how a lot of people would deal with Hardison when he's trying to grift, of just like, how can I just want to be done. Done. Yeah. I'm done with this conversation. I just want you to go away now.
How can I make that please happen?
Like, I mean, like, we've all been there. Everyone who works a customer service job at some point has just been like, I'm just gonna do this for you. You have annoyed me into it.
Which is rewarding bad behavior, but we don't care at that point.
But, like, I certainly do this with patrons where I'm like, I'm just gonna do this for you now. Like, yeah. I could walk you through this process. We're just gonna skip to the end. I'm just taking care of it. You can go now. It's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that scene is, it's a tough one. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, one of the, every once in a while, there's like, for as much as Leverage gets right over and over and over again, there are a few spots where there's just these weird little, like, record scratch moments of like, oh, there was like, you needed someone in the writer's room to be like, no, not this. And I think that they bat much, much better than most shows do, but I think every long-running TV show at some point has moments like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's important to, like, call it out and be like, that's not cool.
Yeah. No, then, no transphobia in the new Leverage. Nope. Maybe some queer characters that are just queer and that's fine.
That'd be amazing. Hey, again, Dean Devlin, give us a call. We'll come
maybe
in.
Maybe cast some trans actors and not draw attention to the fact that they're trans. They could just be, like, people.
Non-binary actors.
It would be fine. And you don't even have to. You don't even have to point it out. They can just be there, same lines.
Yeah, just normal. Just normal people doing normal things.
It would be amazing.
Okay. All right. That got me really excited, but I don't want to get that excited because maybe it won't happen.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe something good will happen in 2020.
All right, just had a little prayer for that. Okay, so moving on. Hardison finally gets into the tower. He gives everyone a real cheesy smile. He's very excited to be there. No one cares. And he figures out where the private jet is, and they send Parker and Hardison, or Elliot, there. And when they get the...
Parker says a little, let's ride, when she gets on to drive the truck thing. And I really, secretly, I want that to be an American Outlaws shout out, and I don't think it is. But it would make me and Corey very happy if it was.
Yeah, I don't know. So they get to the plane and there's no one there. No heart, no thieves, no pilot. And we find out that they've obviously, there's a flight to Chicago that's about to leave, that's boarding, and they're going to be on that flight. So they've got to get back. But they're on this, like, luggage tram that goes slowly. So Parker takes off the regulator that stops it from going under 25 miles an hour, and they zoom back.
Elia's like, she's like, hold on a second, because she figures out it'll take 8 minutes to get back. So she's like, hold on, and crawls under and goes to take it off. And Elliot is just like, what are you doing? Why are you under there? Stop doing that. Get out. Like, so fed up with her. And then she's like, this is going to take us there twice as fast. And like, they just take off, and the car, the little cart,
like, wow.
They're like,
yeah. Robin,
it's really, there's some very quality Elliot Parker stuff happening in this episode, in like the background of just like, oh, these two make very effective field agents. Like, just send them out into the field. It's great.
But also, even when they're not like out in the field, he's just like telling her to settle, because when they're like, all right, we're going to twist Sophie's ankle, and the next thing she's like, oh, are we going to break Sophie's arm this time? Are we going to set Nate on fire? And he's just like, settle down.
You get the idea that, and this might, again, this is probably me writing fan fiction, which is a thing I do from time to time in my head, of, but especially coming at the end of what sounded like a very complicated job, Elliot always seems to be the one who's, like, got stuff happening away in his life, mm-hmm. and so he was probably like, I want to be home, I want to be done, I'm done with this job, and now it's like, oh, good, I get to spend, like, yet more time dealing with Parker and like
Elliot's the most I think demonstrably introverted, because you can tell the moment where he's like, this has been enough, people. I must go to my cave in the woods. Yes. I must make artisanal bread.
But like, Parker has probably been talking about those, like, freaking emeralds for days, right? And he's just like, I am done with you. We are not lighting anyone on fire. Get back. Stop tearing out engines. I just want to be done. Like, I just want to save this kid and be done.
Exactly. He's like, I just need to go to a gym and do some cardio and pull some weights and punch something.
But, like, probably, I imagine sprinting on a treadmill while eating, like, handcrafted pasta.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, he's not going to go to sleep, because he only sleeps, like, 3 hours a night.
Right.
They have to figure out how they're going. Okay, so they, what are you going to do? What happens next? Oh, they get there, and the line of people getting on this flight all have the same kind of luggage, and all they know is that this guy has a black suitcase, but the heart
is not anything close enough to narrow down.
So they've got to figure out how to figure out who this guy is. So Nate, who Sophie's been worried about going rogue, calls Chesney, tells him his name, and says, I've got your heart, and I want $1 million for it, and then hangs up.
And Sophie has, like, legit panic.
Sophie's like, you told him your name!
Like, but that's, like, that's a big deal for Sophie. Like, that's his real name.
Yeah.
And he just, like, told it to someone.
Well, Sophie's of the very much the, you know, the fantasy trope of a true name holds power, you know? Yeah. You know, we don't even know her real name. So,
but that felt like a really honest reaction from Sophie.
Yeah.
Not like a, Nate, I'm worried about you, but like, you told him your name. Why would you do this?
What is wrong with you? And he's like, I want him to know who I am. You're like, oh shit. Okay. And so then he calls Hardis or Elliot back and says, there's a guy getting on the plane who's about to receive a phone call. That's your guy. And they see him and his, like, two buddies, and they're boarding the plane. So they have to figure out a way to get them off the plane. And Sophie's like, okay, mechanical issue. And Nate dismisses that because they would just keep everybody on the plane until they fixed it. She's like, call it a bomb threat. I'm like, oh my God, no, we can't call it a bomb threat to the airport. And he's like, same thing. I'm like, really? Same thing? They would keep you on the plane? I don't think so.
I guess it would depend on where the bomb threat was.
What's originating from? I don't know. So they decide that they are going to fake a tornado which will ground all the planes and everybody will have to leave. And they're like, what? So they fake a tornado and they pull a MassDOT special, which is a callback to the Gone Fishing job. And they call up the Ohio Department of Transportation and say, oh, I saw a tornado near the airport. And they have two people call and they're like, oh, it's a tornado warning.
Yeah, this part was kind of dumb. It didn't really work for, like, it worked fine in the Gone Fishing job.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe I'm a monster, but it has never occurred to me that, like, in the event of weather or something, that I should call the airport and tell them that there is weather happening.
Yeah. Well, then, like, I mean, they're not calling the airport. They're calling, like, the Department of Transportation. Well,
okay, but I still wouldn't ever call to be like, yeah, like, maybe I would call if I was like, there's a rock slide on train tracks. I might be like, oh, I should call and let them know. Maybe. But I can't imagine I would see a tornado and be like, I must alert the authorities. Because it wouldn't cross my mind that they didn't already know. But even charitably, like, say they each called three times. That's six calls. And that's enough for them to be like, we should probably shut down the airport. Like, they're just going to go by the word of, like, possibly crank phone calls. Also, they decide to do a MassDOT special and Sophie just, like, dials the phone and is, like, connected to the people she needs. Like, does she just have that number? It's, like, on speed dial. Like, there's no, like, let me look this number up. Or, like, did they just memorize this for some reason? Or, like,
I don't know. That's another thing. You just got to, like, wave your hands. Be like, it's fine.
That's one of those things that always bothers me on TV shows when people magically know. It's that if they know phone numbers and when people say, hey, do you want to go to the movies this weekend? Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I'll see you on Saturday. And there's no discussion of, like, where they're meeting and when. Or, like, oh, I'll pick you up tomorrow. Like, that sounds great. Like, oh, my God, I have a date. Like, you do? That's not a date. A date has a time attached to it. But the same thing when they're like, oh, let me call them, and they just magically have the number.
No, that is frustrating.
The tornado thing, it bothered me. I don't know what a better solution would have been.
Yeah.
But, because they even say, like, she calls and she's like, I see a tornado. I'm going to email you a picture right now. And the picture just, like, appears. Does everyone just have the email? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is there, like, a report? It bothered me. I didn't like it.
It's too fast. This is not how government works.
I just wanted there to be, like, slightly more something to get everybody out better than that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like they could have filled that part. They could have written new scenes for that instead of other scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But whatever they do, it does work, and they start to evacuate the airport, and everyone evacuates the tower, and even though they're confused because it doesn't look like tornado weather outside, and Hardison is able to, like, freak out the guy who's in charge enough to have him leave him alone in the tower. And Chesney calls Nate back, in order to give him his evil speech of evil about, like, oh, I've planned this and I've spent so much money and I have, like, eight contingency plans and this is my life. Like, if you do this, it would kill me. And he's said something about, he's like, oh, I wouldn't kill you. But he says something about, well, God helps those who help themselves. And Nate's like, and I help people who can't help themselves. And he's like, if this heart doesn't get to this kid and he spends 1 minute more than he needs to in the hospital, I will come and kill you myself. And you're like, shit, Nate, okay. Meanwhile, a flight is coming in, a transatlantic flight is flying into Cincinnati, Ohio. And they are low on fuel and they have to land
even though Hardison's trying to wave them off and be like, you can't land here.
And the pilot's like, I'm going to land over your objections. And Hardison's like, wait, you can do that?
Yeah, he's like, I'm the captain. I can do that. He's like, oh, shit. Meanwhile, as people are evacuating and like leaving the terminal, Parker grabs the suitcase from the thieves and leads them on a merry chase.
It's such a good gag too, though, when she grabs it, because they're like everyone is coming off the airport and she's in like a jumpsuit, like waving people to where they need to go. And then she kind of counts down like 3, 2, 1, like it's going to be this big plan. And then she just like runs past the guy and grabs the bag and keeps running.
And says,
the big plan is just like getting it going. And that, it's such a Joss Whedon joke. Like that same joke was on a Buffy episode almost entirely, of like, do you know, it's like Buffy, Xander and Spike being like, do you know the plan? Like, I'm clear on it. Are you? Yes. Like 3, 2, 1. And they like run up to a high school kid and like tear his jacket off and then run away. It's like the exact same joke.
You're like, this is not suave.
It's so good.
So she like leads them on a chase down some back hallways until Elliot pops out of a corner and he takes care of a couple of the guys, because there's three of them, I think. And Hardison is freaking out about not having played enough flight simulators in his life. And then he's like, light bulb, I'm going to download a flight simulator. And no, that's going to keep me at a lamp.
Okay, so I looked this up because I was like, why? Why is there a flight simulator? Are air traffic controllers playing flight simulators? Like, I was concerned about this. But Mike, that flight simulator was like a hidden program in Excel 97. So
what?
It's possible that they just had the really old
version.
Oh, I mean, that would have been an old OS to be running. And I don't know, I feel like maybe air traffic control towers have like their own proprietary software. I don't know what they're running.
Yeah.
But it's possible that that was like a hidden thing, a hidden program that he just knew about that was in there.
That's wild.
Because a lot of the old Microsoft.
There's no way he downloaded that right away.
No, but a lot of the old Microsoft suites had like weird hidden stuff in them.
I had no idea.
Yeah. But yeah, so he pulls up a flight simulator and then is able to like figure out what vector won't kill everybody. Which made, I didn't really understand, but made me think that maybe I should watch Die Hard 2 again and I would understand it more.
I wondered if like when he gets the pin number and he goes through the door and he says something about, next time I'm gonna take the train, I was like, that's a reference to something, and I could not remember if it was Die Hard. Or, like, I feel like...
It's not Speed, I don't think. Maybe? Next time I'm gonna...
Or if it's even, like, a callback to something in Leverage.
I mean, he was on it.
They were on the plane, like, next time I'm gonna take a train, or next time I'm gonna take a bus.
If anyone knows, please tweet it.
Yeah, like, when he said it, it very much sounded like a quote.
Yeah.
But back to Parker, who's still being chased by the last criminal, the last thief. She, like, gets knocked over by a big cart of luggage and, like, then tries to grab the black suitcase again, but the criminal thug guy has a gun, and he has a gun in the airport, sure. It doesn't even look like the plastic ones the other guy had. And he takes the suitcase and like leaves. And then we find out that he got on the private jet and took off. But they make us think at the beginning, but it's not the real suitcase, the real.
They did a sneaky trick. Thing.
It's a sneaky trick. We see that they put the snow globe in there instead. And now they have to get to the hospital right away. So they run outside. There's an ambulance that's been waiting for them. And the ambulance driver is like, where have you been? I was waiting for you forever.
And Nate like immediately punches him out. It's like a running punch. And he's like, he said he had 8 contingencies and I've counted at least 7. So Elliot, get that knife he's got in it, or not knife, gun that he has in his.
Well, I mean, the fact that Elliot just like picks up a gun is like, oh, this is serious.
Yeah.
Elliot cares. Well,
Elliot doesn't like to use a gun, but I don't think he's going to leave it on an unconscious man on the middle of the sidewalk either.
Yeah, but often you see him pick guns up and like dismantle them immediately and he doesn't.
Yeah.
He just like picks it up. And it might just be like a little, I'm not going to call this part lazy, but just like a quick sort of, you know, not meant to be a character beat, but I kind of felt like maybe after what happened with like Damian Moreau, that maybe he came to terms with it a little bit and is more willing to like,
guns now.
Yeah. Or just like not treat them as such a binary sort of.
Yeah.
You know, also I think they're all taking it very seriously that like they're going to get this heart to this kid.
Right. Also, you know, we're on a timetable. Like,
yeah,
you can dismantle the gun in the ambulance. So they get Joshua his heart, and they're all like watching him through this large window in his room. And I mean, I haven't been to too many hospitals after someone's had open heart surgery.
Oh, I thought this was before.
But, well, I mean, regardless, I feel like they would be prepping him and they would get it because they've got to get this heart into him, right? I don't know at what point this is, but
because none of them have changed.
I haven't been to any hospital room where there's a huge window that's open where you can watch the people inside who are sick. Like,
well, also, like, if he just had a heart surgery, like, there's probably some like delay before you can have visitors.
Yeah
and it must have been right before. It must have been like right before he goes to surgery.
Sure. And that's fine.
Where they're like checking because they probably
that's like I can't
maybe
handle.
It's the maternity ward. I don't know.
I was like, this used to be the nursery. Like,
well, and also like these 5 random people.
Yes. Why are they watching me? Also, that boy is not 15. I know he has a heart problem and that probably like delayed some of his growth, but that boy is not 15.
I'll take your word for this. Children, I understand like there's like babies, toddlers, children, and like teenagers. But to me, like, but I don't there's anything from like 8 to 17. I'm like,
I'd clock that kid at like 11,
okay,
maybe 12 before a growth spurt, but he was like, his head was too small. He had a little tiny head. But again, maybe having heart problems stops you growing. I don't know. But yeah, they're all like standing there and they're talking about how they're sad that not everybody's getting punished. At least the kidnapper got picked up by the police, which is a cute little scene.
Stuffed inside a bag.
And like the kid from the restaurant's there too. And he's like, with the cop. Like, and they're like, what could be in this bag? Like, this kid knows that it's a person. He was there.
But he's got to play it cool, right? Because he can't.
I don't know. That was off duty.
He could be in the revival.
Yeah. But they're like, you know, kind of commiserating that, well, we can't turn them in or that would shine a light on what we did. And Hardison's like, yeah, we did a bunch of illegal things. And he kind of like taps Sophie on the shoulder. She's like, ah, which is a callback to her sunburn, which is pretty great. And then we get this like kind of intense scene at the very, very
it's
end.
It's very dark.
Very dark. Nate is sitting in the apartment with like a spotlight on him, building a model boat and like has a drink. And his phone rings. It's so creepy, like, because he doesn't call to do this. He is called by Chesney. And Chesney is like, oh, I was looking you up and like I know who you are and you're gonna be responsible for me. And he's like, no. He's like, I could just go get another heart. He's like, no, you can't because I'm watching you. I'm watching your company. I'm watching where your money goes. And he kind of like doesn't believe him. And he's holding the snow globe as well. But he's like, oh, I see you've got like a BP rate of 86. And he's like, oh no, it just went up to 111 or whatever it was. Because Nate is watching him on all of the screens that are in the apartment. And it is super creepy.
Somehow he's managed to bug this guy with the technology that was available to him in an airport. But whatever.
I don't know.
Artisan figured it out.
But we don't know like how far in the future this scene is. Like Hardison might have been able to. And then he says, well, it seems that you've killed me after all. And Nate says, oh, I didn't kill you. God killed you. I just made sure it took.
Which is admittedly an incredibly badass line.
It is a very badass. And it kind of mirrors. So in the last episode, we met the guy who was bugging them at the beginning of the season. And he has a line about like, before you come down with your blood tipped swords, like something about your avenging, you know, just very like biblical bringing retribution kind of line. And then having it almost mirrored at the end of this episode, just like, oh yeah, Nate is like the angel of death.
I feel like
bringing judgment.
These last few, because there's only a few more episodes in the season, right? This is like,
no,
I think there are like five more.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
oh.
9 more episodes. This is a really long season. There's like 18 episodes in that season.
Oh, well, there goes my thesis. I was going to say that I felt like they were kind of bringing up the pressure a little bit so that when you get to the finale, like, you buy that all of the men involved have been kind of pushed to their limits.
Yeah, they're definitely building that case now. Like, they've brought up Dubenich again. We've seen Chesney. We've met the other guy whose name I literally was talking about 2 weeks ago, and I can't
remember. I always think of him as Leon because of Saving Grace, but that's not his actual name. Leon Rippey? Is that his name?
Not on this. His name is...
Oh, that's the actor's name, I think.
Oh, maybe.
But normally at the end of the episode, the stinger is like this little... It's like a release of tension. It's them in the bar doing something. And this is like, even in the pilot, right? You get Hardison being like, we're being bugged.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, you don't get that same like release of, or like the air getting let back out at the end of like, oh, everything is fine now.
Yeah. The actor is Leon Rippey. You're right. His name is Jack Latimer. Jack Latimer.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, this does. It's just a kind of like, and the last episode too was Latimer saying, what I want from you is I won't stop you from taking down these guys. I just want you to tell me who you're targeting so that I can make my move and make a profit off this. And Nate's like, get out of my business.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can help. I can give you more information. Is your pride more important than...
Yeah.
And these people, and Nate doesn't say anything. He walks off, like, so you don't get an answer to that. So that's unresolved as well.
I mean, and I know next week's episode it's kind of a little like step away from the season long arc. It's the Queen's Gambit job, the one in Dubai with Sterling, which is a great episode, but it's not part. It's like, kind of outside of the timeline a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's a breather episode.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, and like the two episodes previous to the last one were like kind of emotional ones for Parker. So like they ended on like Parker kind of crying and like going through her feelings at the bar and things like that. Yeah.
I want to look at some.
We are getting a little more serious. All right. I did not come up with a high slate because I was so excited about our new news, which I figured was high slate enough for me. But did you come up with anything?
Yeah, I had. So I was looking into airport cons, and I was reading about this guy, Andrew Graydon, airport scammer. So he was a British con man whose con was not very complicated. He would go up to people in the airport and say that he needed like 50 euro to change his flight because he wanted to be able to get home to like in time to tuck his children into bed, which I felt like was a really good line of like tugs on your heartstrings, but it's not like my mother is dying and I must get to her beds or something that would trigger you as like a really dude. This is like, oh,
yeah. And 50 euro was not.
Yeah. And he would show them his real passport with his real name on it and say, he would give them his name and a fake like Yahoo email address and say like, I will pay you back, like email your information to this email address and I will send it back to you. And he never did. Right. But he did this scam all across Europe, lots of airports, and made like hundreds of thousands of euro off of this.
Wow.
But so he was exposed in like 2009 where someone took a picture of his passport. Like, oh, yeah, I'll email you, but let me get a picture of your passport. And then started to feel like, oh, maybe I got scammed. So, like, people would report it. And then the story broke in 2009. And he started openly taunting people who reported it. It was like, you got ripped off and can't handle it. Or, like, you're an idiot. You couldn't catch a snail. So they kept trying to catch him. But they couldn't because he was going, like, from country to country. And it's 50, you know. Each individual crime was so small that he wouldn't attract much attention.
He couldn't, flag his passport?
Well, no, because he would just, like, wander into an airport, and in the EU, you could just, like, go around.
Oh, so he wouldn't even, like, he'd just be, like, by the ticket counters. Like, he wouldn't be past security.
I don't think so. I think he would just, yeah, so.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But so they did eventually catch him in Germany, I think. And so it was like this kind of like a very small big deal, if that makes sense. Like there were a lot of like low level reports that were like, hey, we got this airport scammer guy. So he was serving a 10-month sentence. And then he said that it was too stressful to keep doing this. So when he got out of prison, he was just going to go work for his brother's agricultural business when he gets released. But this is the quote that I loved. He claims to be a reformed man who will go to work for his brother's agricultural business when he is released, a claim flatly denied by his brother.
I don't want that asshole working for me. He's
so much. No, he's not working for me. So yeah, it looks like he was operating for about 15 years and he was making about $22,000 a month. So and that's a lot of, like, that's a lot of walking. Just get a job, my man. It would be less time than...
But like, $20,000 a month? Are you kidding? That's amazing. Tax-free, baby.
I guess, but... I mean, there are some cons that I hear about that I'm like, just get a real job. Like, that's less work. The very low-level airport con that I would run when I had really long layovers was to go... Particularly if I had a layover in like Heathrow or a really big airport, I would go to a bookstore and just like stand there and read a book until I started getting side eyes from the people who worked there of like, lady, you've been in this bookstore for half an hour. And then I would just go to the next bookstore and find the same book and just turn to the page. Because I would read through like Caleb Carr novels and really like not very good, like, you know, like the airporty adventure novels.
Yeah.
Read through them like place to place. And I had one layover that was a real long because we had messed up the AM/PM, so it was like a 15-hour layover, and I didn't have much money because I was a student and all my stuff was packed, so like I had very little cash. And so I just like stood by the Starbucks and looked really pathetic, and people would like be like, are you okay? And I'd be like, yeah, I need some coffee, but I don't have any money and I don't have a debit card. And people be like, oh, I'll buy you a coffee, dear. Like, okay, thank you. Just go to the next Starbucks and do the same thing.
What?
Get like a Starbucks and go read the book and then like con my way.
Why did you research airport cons? You are an airport con artist.
I was an airport con artist. Other great moments of me slowly becoming a master criminal, except that my sense of like waspy guilt is such that I literally can't steal things or I like have panic attacks. We braved Target last weekend because we needed some stuff that you can only get, like, was not grocery store stuff. It was like, okay, we need some.
Yeah.
We went to Target, and while I was there, I was like, I'm going to buy these exercise leggings for the running. And we did self-check, and as we were leaving, the alarm went off, and we were like, oh, what? And the lady just, like, waved us through, like, yeah, yeah, whatever, just go, you're fine. And I got home and discovered that there was actually a security tag on the leggings. Mm-hmm. And normally, I would have just gone back to Target and been like, hey, yeah, I forgot this, but I was like, but I don't... That feels like too much going out. That feels irresponsible. So I had to look up how to remove a security tag. And like 20 minutes later, I got the thing off.
Did you get it off?
I did. Nice. It is very difficult. It would have been less difficult just to take it off in the store. And I don't feel bad about it because I didn't shoplift the item. Like, I didn't pay for it. So don't shoplift or steal. It is not worth the hassle. But.
And avoid going out. Stay home. Stay safe.
Stay home.
We just have to say, hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. We're excited we got to tell you about the like reboot of the show. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Tara for the
Queen's Gambit job.
Thank you.
So everyone brush up on your chess and Dubai knowledge, I guess.
Excellent. Two things I know almost nothing about.
You can watch the
one of the Fast and the Furious movies. They jumped a car from one giant tower to the other giant tower. And it was terrifying.
There's also the fourth Mission Impossible movie, which has Tom Cruise actually doing that stunt.
Yes.
And if you, for chess, you could watch the end of the first X-Men, which has a cool chess scene in it.
That's true.
Or History of the World Part 1, where they have human chess, which is worth watching.
God, forgot that.
I think they might also have boobs in that one.
I will just be listening to the soundtrack to the musical Chess and cry, because that musical just makes me cry. But yes, Robin, thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me on. Always talking a fun time.
Yes, always. And yeah, you won't see us again, but you hear us again in 2 weeks.
Good night.
My schedule's off because of this pandemic thing.
Good afternoon. I don't know. What even is time?
What is it? I don't know. Whatever he says on the Truman Show.
Time is a lake and it is draining.
He's like, goodbye, good evening, and if I don't see you again, good morning, or whatever it is.
All right. Well, goodbye, everybody. I hope everybody stays very safe.
Ditto. Ditto. Okay. Bye, Robin. Back to this reboot.
not yeah reboot revival was it reminds me of when Kumail Nanjiani was doing the X-Files podcast all about the X-Files, and then they announced that they were bringing the X-Files back and Kumail got to be on an episode, and I just want to offer my services. I don't want to be a bad guy, but if I have to be a bad guy, like Dean Devlin, I'm here.
Or like maybe you just need to have a scene set in the library and you would like to have some professional librarians to like add some verisimilitude to the background.
Exactly. You know, they always have actual journalists and newscasters because they're the ones who know what they're doing. Same thing
it would
for
be
a
like It would be like when John McCain was on 24. We just walk in and like set a folder down. We fine.
But also, like, we could talk shop with Noah Wiley.
Christian Kane can beat me up. It is fine.
I mean, I'm even fine with being a victim. Yeah. So, Dean Devlin, just DM me on Twitter, and we'll get this worked out. I have tons of vacation time. You know, and, hey, I'm an essential worker right now, so you should...
Also, she has great hair, Dean. You can't tell from the podcast, but she has amazing hair. And it would look really, really good on screen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do not mind being on camera. I love it, actually. Okay. So, yeah, if anybody knows Dean Devlin or anybody else on the crew, the cast, let me know.
Get Steve on Leverage.
I would cry. Okay.